scheme of creation. So we've gathered on this longest night by the power of She-Wolf, who precedes Scheherazade, to help Scheherazade in her task, liberated from fiction, to save the world. So many of us may know, thank you for the flowers. And the last time when I was in Berkeley also, someone handed me flowers with a note that said, thank you for not giving up on beauty. So we'd say that to all of us here. Thank all of us for not giving up on beauty. Because we've gathered to address the core issues of conflict in the world, in our own hearts and in the larger aspects of creation too, to restore intimacy, intimacy with this night, that we may become agents of intimacy. So many of us know this frame story of Scheherazade, who is the quintessential compassionate trickster indeed, because She-Wolf becomes Scheherazade. And Scheherazade, what she does is she liberates, she lifts the curse from the land, liberates all women, and liberates even the tyrant from his own spell. So with that in mind, we know the frame story, basically, of the 1001 Nights that we want to invoke. And what it is that King Shahryar and his brother discovers his wife cuckolding with a man with an enormous gong, and that's made of great import. And so he cuts both of them in quarters and rides off to go greet his brother. But his brother notices, Shahryar notices that his brother looks, you know, grim and unhappy for some reason, but he won't say why. And Shahryar goes off hunting. And meanwhile, his brother secretes himself in a private room off of the pleasure garden. And he sees Shahryar's wife come in, and 20 dancing girls, the concubines, and they close the gates to the garden, and 10 of the dancing girls take off their costumes, and they are virile guys, and they all get it on. And Shahryar's wife says, yes, and come to me, oh great. And this great strapping man comes, and they make love for hours and hours and hours. And this cheers up Shahryar's brother for no end. And Shahryar says, upon seeing the countenance of his brother lifted and glowing once again, why, you've regained your health. And his brother says to him, don't ask me why. and King Shahryar says, I will ask you why, on pain of death, even though you're my brother, because we're in these tales and we do that. Because we are not intimate with the world, and we're hasty in our actions, and whoops, off with their head, oops, a mistake. So Shahryar's brother reveals it to him, and Shahryar hides himself and sees this too, and then he has them all put to death and goes, ah, fooey on all women, oh, it's terrible. And I will never trust women again, so I will each night marry a virgin, bed her, and then at dawn I will behead her, and that way I'll be safe. Ah. So the land is getting pretty thin of virgins, and a great pall has fallen on the land. And Scheherazade is the daughter of the Grand Wazir. She's She-Wolf, but she's disguised as Scheherazade, the daughter of the Grand Wazir. And she says, Father, you know, I will volunteer to marry King Shahryar. Oh, no, yes, I will. So she does, and she says Scheherazade means city freer and or lion-hearted, and her sister Dunyazade is called world freer. We're entering into the realm of the women saviors through this story, through this portal. And so Scheherazade says to her sister, after I've bedded the king, do come in and entreat me to tell a story, because that is my specialty. I've spent my whole life devoted to stories. And Dunyazade says, gladly. And so the way it wends its way is that Scheherazade begins a tale that is so interesting that as dawn comes and Scheherazade perceives the dawn of day and ceases to say her permitted say, right in the middle of the story. And King Shahryar says, well, what's another night? That won't hurt. Ah, goes on for 1001 nights, of course, by which time they've had 3 children. And he does see, you know, his ways. Oh, I've been an idiot. I've been a fool, you know. And my brother will marry Dunyazade, your sister, and we will live happily ever after. And in that way, all of this eroticism will be restored to the world. So it's very much, it's the task of transforming the impossible man, which we can all relate to. That's right. Half of this audience, well, more than half, the whole audience is nodding in it. So the task of transforming the impossible man, nay, the murderous and tyrannical man, it's the man who has murdered his own heart. And we'd say, ah. And in that sense, also, it ties us into the Grail legend as well that lies at the heart of Western mythology, where the land is ill. It is said right at the beginning, up front in the Grail legend, due to the estrangement of masculine and feminine, more than men and women, the abuse of nature and the abuse of rank and privilege. And for that reason, the land is ill, the king is ill, the king is dying. So all of these redemptive stories. So with Scheherazade as our guide this night, with this powerful night, we will offer ourselves to it and journey to the still point. Solstice means sol, sun, stis, stand still. This is the longest night of the year that has been celebrated, we know, for at least 25,000 years, and now we will say, what is what is that cycle and what is unique about now? It's always about, will we survive the winter? And certainly that is strong now for all of us, and we want to gather force, do good juju and work this evening too, so that our prayers for all living creatures who hope to survive the winter, and so that we may indeed survive and rise up as a powerful culture. So setting intention, this is called the Saturnalia also too. It's the festival of Saturn. Saturn is our focus, our definitions of reality. In ancient Greece, the statues of Saturn were chained for whatever patriarchal reason they had, but on the Saturnalia, they were unchained, and the old laws were thrown into the cauldron of the solstice. So this is a time where we get to cast out as we will, we lay the year to rest and everything with it that we want to put on that year. We lay our heavy hearts, our griefs, our quabbles, our pettiness, anything, and more profoundly too, as we dive towards the end of this evening, we lay all of that to rest so that it can be rekindle. This is also the birthday of King Arthur. It's the birthday of the hero redeemer within our hearts. And right now we're having King Arthur and Scheherazade and Chiron, whom we'll introduce all these characters. That's the quality of the heroic that wants to be born in each one of our hearts this night as we gather force, send out blessing. And we enter this season of winter, started by Capricorn, which is about work. So we say, let all of us leave this gathering tonight with a clear sense of our work, capital W work. And may we pray for everyone to have meaningful work. You know, 7 million people have been, 7 million more people are out of work since September 11th, not even counting Enron employees. And God knows they could use some meaningful work. So meaningful work, work that we can gladly contribute our hearts to. So as Bob Marley says, you don't got some work to do, we got some work for you. There's plenty of work to be done. So we want to become intimate collaborators with nature through the power of story. Because with Scheherazade, we enter the whole realm of story, the power of story. And we remember, there's a part of our storytelling souls that remembers that once we humans were not alienated from creation, but understood that we live in a storytelling universe, that everything is talking to us all the time. The candle, the light, the church, the person next to all of it, the leaves, animate, everything is animate, everything is telling its story all the time, that if we but approached it with reverent curiosity as our primary manner of relating, a way of intimacy, then everything would tell us its story. I'm a peanut, I make great sandwiches, all of that. I mean, so the model also of the frame story. The frame story is very, very ancient. It's the overall story within which is a story, within which is a story, within which is a story. And the power of stories is strong. So there's one earlier frame story before the 1001 Arabian Nights, and that's called the Panchatantra, and it comes from India, and it's wonderful also. It's a large story about how to become wise in the world without having to be a saint, and it's all told through animals. And it's a useful advice. You know, better with the learned dwell, even though it be in hell, than with vulgar spirits roam palaces that gods call home. Monster box developments, no. So it also puts before us, too, something very much on the table, the issue of intimacy and survival. The Panchatantra says that it is not so vulgar as to consider money important, and says, and what wise woman or man with a heroic, unique contribution to make to the world would concern themselves with that which is not important? So money must be had in sufficient abundance so that we don't have to think about it. We go, yes, may that be true. We want to make that ashe. And I just have to do a detour. I often prepare, a radio show person 2 days ago said, how do you prepare? And I was like, what shall I make up? Many ways in which I prepare, but I also then put my notes out and go to sleep and let the elves rearrange them in keeping with the fairy tale motif. So a sidebar also at this point too, many of you who heard the radio show recently know that I am very enthusiastic about the movie Lord of the Rings. It is at last a really strong and a useful frame story. It's a very accurate depiction of now. It's like, all right, this is where we are now. the forces of Enron, the evil forces of Enron, Sauron, you know, all of that, and how we tell the story. And I think, you know, because many of the characters that we're dealing with can best be understood in their costume, the Donald Rumsfeld mask, for instance, as Lord of the Ring characters, shape-shifting into strange monstrosities. And so Rumsfeld does remind me also when he was asked, you know, somebody said, well, who's that guy in the Bin Laden video? And Rumsfeld said, we don't know, but he interests us. You know, I heard it on the radio, but you could hear his eyes glittering like, And then there's also a kind of Gollum aspect. Well, I think there's a Gollum aspect to Bush, too. He uses a lot of S's, and S's, my precious. My father's precious, and I have my precious back. And speaking of Papa, Bush Sr. was recently on TV and said about Robert Walker, the young American who joined the Taliban, at a time when every U.S. citizen was funding the Taliban officials full salary up until 1999. So when Robert Walker joined, the Taliban was, we were funding them. He joined our team. But Bush Sr. said, this is a quote, I have a unique punishment for Robert Walker. Let him go around the country, you know, unwashed with his long hair, and let's see what kind of sympathy he receives here. And we all know, like, we all look like that sometimes, and we have lots of friends who do too. But what a revealing, you know, what a compassionate culture, my goodness. Thank goodness we've come to restore that. So Scheherazade says, you know, before she enters into her agreement, as an act of confident compassion and tricksterishness too, she says, by Allah, O my father, how long shall this slaughter of women endure? And we know that in Afghanistan, many, many things, but as we journey to the heart, the core of creation, the heart of winter this night, and we spiral into the realm of the source of all stories, the bubbling fountain of creation, all stories, dreams, and myths. You know, and Neptune would say to us, we are all part of one large dream, and the greatest illusion is that we're a part, that we could possibly harm one part of creation without it reverberating through our own souls. So everything is real, everything is symbolic, everything is speaking to us in very strong terms. In Afghanistan, every 30 minutes, a woman dies in childbirth. 20% of the children do not reach the age of 5. It's very huge. Now, the model of Scheherazade came to me, or she came to us in the following way, is that one of the frame stories, the astrological frame story of now, is that Saturn, whose festival we celebrate this night, there's a whole crowd of forces within us that we're celebrating. So Saturn is the keeper of the structure, keeper of the frame story in a sense. And Saturn's structure of world is opposite Pluto, death, rebirth, transformation. And on September 11th, we saw that very strongly and very literally. Saturn's structure of world in Gemini, twins, twin towers, Pluto, death, rebirth, in Sagittarius, arrow. We saw the arrow of death go into the twin towers. We saw an incredible act of dedicated symbolism devoted to death. And so we say, well, here's this pattern. We must have an even greater devotion to life. And also, we had symbolism without empathy, without any sense of moisture, kinship to moist-eyed beings, as though it was really like the school kids who blew their classmates away, as though it were a video game, without any limbic sense of kinship. And so we say, this is the heart of the matter that we want to heal and address in ourselves and in the world, this absence of intimacy. And so in that frame, Saturn opposite Pluto, change or die structure of world, which presides over, it's one of the main frame stories through May of this coming year. And so we say, as astrologers or symbolists, we'd say, Pluto's in Sagittarius. Sagittarius is called ruled by or an incarnation of Jupiter, the storytelling principle. Where is Jupiter? Jupiter's in Cancer, feminine fertility, richness. We say some things are always true, but there are moments when they are truer. It is always important, the stories we tell ourselves, but now the stories we tell will root and blossom and bloom either with poison or with delicious fruit and a whole new world culture, the world tree. So that's why the feminine art of storytelling is crucial to us now, and Scheherazade comes to us in that way. So You know, and she does her trick when she perceives the dawn of day and sees saying her permitted say. Then, quoth Dunyazad, how wonderful. And what is, you know, and Scheherazade says, and what is this compared with that I could tell thee the night to come if I live and the king spare me? Then thought the king, by Allah, I will not slay her until I hear the rest of her tale, for truly it is wondrous. And then she goes on, it hath reached me, O auspicious king, the tale of Enron and the tale of Zoan. So the model of the frame story also patterns within patterns. It's very much like the beauty in Arabic art, arabesques. Patterns within patterns, fractals. Again, storytelling universe, everything talking to us. And it reminded me also of when I was a teenager and sort of in a Bernadette Devlin fiery religion is, you know, a crutch for the weak and everything sucks. And then someone gave me sacred plants to participate in. And that opened the window of, patterns without, patterns of great beauty within, arabesques in, arabesques out, the swirling, all of that. So we'd say, you know, I call it the first positive responsible drug use, which then later got a little iffy, but still, it liberates and redeems us, you know, into a larger world. The plants tell us their story, and we liberate even the tyrant king of our own selves. There's a wonderful book also that just in the way of synchronicity that someone had loaned me many years ago, actually, and I'd left it lying around as we do. And then once I'd come up with this theme, yes, this is the story that wants to be told. It wants us to tell it. And the book is called On the Road to Baghdad by a Turkish writer named Gun Ali Gun. And it contains the story of Scheherazade and Huru also. Huru is a main character. And it's all about storytelling, and that was how wonderful. And it's the theme of telling the story as though we had gentle hearts and thereby creating an audience of gentle hearts. And Neptune also would say to us as a crucial strategy, we're invited to be the thing that we want to create. Meaning, when I was also wondering about where should I do solstice, where does it want to happen, let me talk to it. And a friend said, well, why don't you imagine becoming the solstice, become the still point, and from that point, there'll be no decision, it will become clear. I thought, what a good idea. You know, if we want to help water, we become like water. We want to help wolves become like wolves. This shape-shifting capacity that fairy tales allow us and remind us of, animals always changing into humans, humans into animals back and forth, that we're all one fluctuating, large, permeable part. And as we come to the core, we go, well, let's play with this. One of the ways of shape-shifting metaphor, we'd say we have heavy hearts at the end of the year to lay down and to transform. And the Saturn, Neptune, and cahoots would say very often that heavy burden, we think it's the problem. But on this night, the planets would say to us, no, it's actually the solution. It's your magic backpack you've been wearing for 45 years, and it's very heavy. Why don't you take it off and open it up and see what's inside? You go, what's inside is all stories and galaxies and the power of imagination and visualization. And that's what we do. I mean, it's Santa Claus, really. That's behind the thing. Presence for all of us tonight. This night, we lay down the burden that we thought was our problem, but in fact, again, it's the weight of the magic backpack. We go, we are infinite. Our powers of imagination are what is divine. You know, Neptune says it's a great misreading, incapacity, literalized incapacity to read myth when people hear, you know, that we are made in God's image. It does not mean we look like old white guys with beards. It means we are dreamed in the imagination of the divine, and that dreaming is our way of participating, is the divine part of us that participates in creating the world. And Neptune would say we journey back into intimacy once again, too, one by being able to read the world symbolically, to understand that it is speaking to us all the time. That's the contemplative aspect. And the dynamic aspect is then entering, going to that still point that we're journeying to right now, so that we then assume imaginative responsibility for dreaming the world into being. How do we want it to be? And Jupiter and Cancer would say, and what do we want it to feel like? What do we want each one of us to feel like by May? It's like throwing a positive grappling hook into the spring that's on the other side of this winter we travel through. So Neptune would say a unifying vision and aspiration. We'd say also that Neptune, the liberating powers of imagination available this night, that the divine itself wants to be liberated from previous confines of human imagination. You know, all this big, I don't know how many of you saw the Onion or see the Onion magazine online sometimes, but after September 11th, they were pretty good on the edge, too. They had a Newsweek. I'll have to censor words because this will be, well, we'll let the editor do it. They had the Newsweek cover, which was basically holy fucking shit. Within which they had an interview with God. And God said, look, just don't kill each other, all right? It's that simple. Just don't kill each other. Just cut it out. It's very simple. So at the heart of the Arabian Nights stories also, with that, we go back to what is the origin of all conflict? And the Arabian Nights would say it's erotic. It's suppression of the erotic, but it's also the estrangement of Eros from the heart. And read symbolically, the women were estranged from their eroticism, was estranged from their heart as much as the men's. And this fundamental conflict between Eros and heart, underneath the cruelty is the desire for love in all of the stories. So it's also, again, just that impulse, too. It's like, you know, we'd say what's very largely alive in the world, too, on a kind of masculine-feminine level is like, oh, feminine wild abandon, because that's what makes these men insane at the beginning of the frame story, this lusty feminine abandon, like, whoa. And they go, oh, I want it. No, I hate it. No, yes, no, yes, no. Oh, no, I will go to war. No, I will kill everything. So if we can journey back to that, you know, On the Road to Baghdad says, the world is run by those who can't make love, the dervish said, or those who do it badly. That's why the world's in trouble. Yes. And a wise colleague who was here tonight also years ago said, God gave us sex to make up for having to be here. So, also, friends of mine who have the Al-Qaeda handbook training manual say that, I mean, literally, that the initiation into Al-Qaeda is a marriage ceremony. You marry Muhammad. You marry the man. And so we go, that's interesting, too. And another friend of mine, wonderful Scorpio friend, Scorpios are good on this one, said, if you go on Google on a search and you put in Mecca, the third listing will take you to the Kaaba, the most sacred object, the only sacred object in Islam. And the picture of the Kaaba that you can find there, it's a black stone, the object of all Islamic pilgrimage. And in the black stone is a silver, very clear yoni. It's a feminine vulva right where the pilgrims kiss the rock. We go, well, that's pretty interesting too. And in Mecca, there were many, many, many objects of worship, and Muhammad got rid of all of them except for the Kaaba. And as my Scorpio ally says, it's men worshiping mom and calling it dad again. So if we think of this the conflict, like, no, I want to worship mom, but I will call it dad, and no, and I want women, so I will kill them. No, I don't. And the murdering of heart that allows us to then feed on death as a culture. A great writer, Muhammad Iqbal, at the turn of the century said, Asia is a living body and Afghanistan its heart. In the ruin of the heart lies the ruin of the body. So long as the heart is free, the body remains free. If not, it becomes a straw adrift in the world. So we say Scheherazade, Jupiter and Cancer, the call to life, away from the brink, empathy, water, the waters of life. Because Jupiter and Cancer would say to us, would remind us of what we remember too, that once we would have measured the evolution of any civilization by what it cancered, what it nourished, cultivated, and protected. Its children, its environment, its storytellers, elders, all of that. And so by that measure, of course, we live in a completely insane world. Because not only are those things which any civilization up until industrialism would have most closely treasured, those things are all slungshot into vulnerability. Like, here you go, out there. And so there's a wonderful story, again, the stories within the stories, the fractal stories. And this is also resonant, too, because way back in early plant sacrament days in the 60s, I had a great experience with many really wonderful people. We decided to climb Mount Musalak in New Hampshire and drop sacred sacrament at the top. What a good idea. And it was an excellent idea. There were many people that you would now know as famous, good-hearted contributors to the world there then. And we gathered wild blueberries and made wild blueberry soup, and a great storm came up, and we took refuge in a little teeny tin-roofed cabin. And there a wonderful colleague told us by heart a longer version of the story I'm about to tell you, of the magic mountain, the talking bird, the singing tree, and the golden waters of life. And so there's the Scheherazade story, and then within that, these stories of women redeemers. And so I had to call my brother. I have the 6-volume set of the Arabian Nights, but that's the short version. And many of the women are edited out. My brother has the 20-volume version, so that's where you got to go. So I got this revived, the tale. And it's the tale of the talking bird, the magic mountain, the singing tree, and the golden waters of life. The short version is like this. There are 3 sisters. And they are confiding in each other their secret dreams and hopes. And Harun al-Rashid is a character in the Arabian Nights. He's a king who often dons, you know, a cloak and walks throughout the city streets to see what's what. And he overhears the 3 sisters saying their most cherished dream. And one sister says, I want to marry the Shah's cook, and that way I will have tasty things all the time. Yum, 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 yum. And the other one says, I want to marry the Shah's masseuse, and that way I will never have back problems. It'll be great. And the third youngest sister says, I want to marry the Shah, and I will give him 3 children, and they will all be wonderful. They will be equally wonderful, and one of them will be a daughter who is educated and wise and redemptive and powerful. And so Harun al-Rashid goes back to his castle, summons the 3 sisters, and says, I will grant all your wishes. You know, you marry the cook, you marry the masseuse, and you marry me. And the other 2 sisters, just like in Psyche, as they often are in fairy tales, are like, ah, phooey. That's the problem of asking for too little. Jupiter in Cancer says, you know, or Jupiter in Cancer in the form of great Harlem preacher Reverend Ike says, you can go to the ocean with a thimble or a bucket, but the ocean thinks you're an idiot if you say, oh, ocean, please give me a thimble full of water. You know, it's like, how large can you... So the sisters are very jealous, and the youngest sister is delighted. She soon becomes great with child. The sisters insist on being her midwife. So she gives birth to a beautiful baby. They take the baby, toss it in the river, and instead put a hedgehog in its place. And the king is puzzled, like, hedgehog? Okay. But oh well, we'll try again. So soon enough, it's Princess Parizada. No, sorry, I'm leaping ahead. So the queen has another child, a beautiful baby. The midwife sisters throw it in the river. And they put a goat in its place. And the king goes, a goat? Never mind, we'll try again. So another baby is born, tossed into the river, and they put a cow in its place. And the Shah says, that does it, this is just terrible. What have I married? I've married this terrible witch. You know, I will put her in the public courtyard, and everyone should spit on her. And if you don't spit on her, then your punishment will be the same as yours, because we're in this really grim story. But meanwhile, the babies have been picked up one by one by the gardener who's taken them in. And says, oh, another baby, amazing. And they are raised, and they are all quite wonderful, but the most wonderful, of course, is Princess Parizada, which means fairy-born. She is between worlds. She is a transitional figure. And they have a wonderful life, and Princess Parizada makes the house incredibly beautiful. And one day a wise dervish woman comes, and Parizada says, "Is not our house, our life is wonderful, isn't it?" And the wise dervish woman says, yes, but you would be even more wonderful if you had the talking bird, the singing tree, and the golden waters of life. Ah, well, we must go about that. It's the problem of having a feng shui consultant come to your house. You go, oh, it's not enough, never enough. Okay, so the boys go, well, we will go first, one at a time. And the first one sets forth and says, I leave behind a dagger. If it turns red, it means I'm dead. Let's hope not. So he goes off, it turns red. Oh, dear, oh, no. The next brother goes forth. A string of pearls I leave behind me. If it breaks, it means I'm dead. But it breaks. All is left is Princess Parizada. So she sets forth, and she comes to the bottom of a mountain. There's a dervish sitting at the bottom, and he says, oh, you, okay, here's the deal. Go up the mountain, and there will be these voices that are terrifying and scary, and they will be hurtling insults at you. Don't turn around, as is so often the admonition in fairy tales. Don't turn around. And Princess Parizada says, do you have any earwax I could put in my ears? No one has ever thought of that, says the dervish. That's incredible. Sure, here you go. And what it So as she makes her way up, she sees, you know, all these countless figures turned to stone, because that's what's happened when they would turn around. And again, it goes into great detail about the insults that the men heroes were unable to resist. You know, hey, pencil dick, what? Ah, no, just stoned. So Princess Parizade goes, and she through great adventures, it goes on and on and on, but she finds the speaking bird, and the speaking bird tells her the whole deal and says, you don't have to cut down the whole tree, just take a little cutting from the singing tree, which is glorious, and take it home and plant it, it will root. And the golden water, and she says, and here you go, the golden water that will nourish the land, and it's whatever, wherever you put it, it's continually replenishing, it's replenishing its moisture, the land will come alive, everything. She says, well, this is nothing without my brothers. He says, just put some water on your brothers and that'll be fine. So she goes down the mountain, and not only does she liberate her brothers, but all the figures of stone, all the murdered hearts, all those who couldn't take insults, who got huffy and turned rigid, she brings them all back to life. And they're like, hooray, hooray, Princess Parizade, how wonderful. So she gets back there, and the boys go hunting, and they encounter the Shah, and he feels some strange, and it is put this way, he meets these young boys, and he feels some strange, erotic attraction. He goes, oh, how kinky, no, this is terrible, but I must investigate further. He's their father, and anyway. But so they invite him back to lunch, and Parizade talks to the talking bird, and the talking bird says, ah, for the Shah, prepare a dish of cucumbers and pearls. And so she does. And the Shah says, this is passing strange, cucumbers and pearls. And the talking bird says, cucumbers and pearls are passing strange, and yet a woman giving birth to a hedgehog, a cow, and a goat is not strange, you idiot, you fool. He goes, oh, my God, my children, I've been a dingbat. Okay, so... So that is the important story, the story within the story. So we'd say, the liberation, there's many things there. In also the road to Baghdad, talks about the ancients had been thinking unimpeded before the big religion set in. So neither of Huru's parents, the physician nor his good wife, held any commerce with unexamined beliefs, nor did they practice religion that manifested itself in brutality against others. We're journeying back, again, deep delving back to intimacy. It also says that the dervish said, hell is always there, but it's only the entranced who go through it lovingly. So we go, it's our manner of traipsing through the world is our manner of bringing back paradise as well, too, this restoration of intimacy. And part of what we quicken also this night, too, this theme of ally etiquette, you know, what is the redemption of the world? Princess Parizade, Scheherazade, treats everyone really in the manner of an equal, which is why things go so well in the tales for them. They speak, they heed the advice of the wise dervish, they talk to everything, and the talking bird, and the singing tree, as all trees are, as all birds are, as all water is meant to be shared, as it is always replenishing. So this theme also... You know, many of you may have heard me say this before, but Uranus, this principle of quickening and electricity and aliveness and reinvention, also alive in us this night. The last ideas associated with it are democracy, equality, synchronicity. And the message to us from that string of pearls is that when we treat each other as equals, regardless of our temporary assignments of gender or status or wealth or not, or wisdom or not, or who's talking or not, when we treat each other equally, then the rate of synchronicity increases dramatically. Right person at the right time, right funding, right this. And this is what gives the transformation of culture a sporting chance, which is, we might say, the forces of Sauron and Enron and, you know, all of that, and Carlyle, and it has reached me, O King, the tale of Carlyle Group. I mean, all of those may have more money and more lawyers and more organization, according to Danny Sheehan. And so we do want to get more organized, at least more organized than everybody. But if we treat each other well, then the path opens. The power of synchronicity opens before us, this manner of relating. And again, Venus, the other principle of intimacy, would say, is our manner of relating an offering or an imposition? And Saturn also this night would say, we want to grow the forms of meaningful work. We want to grow the forms that most serve life, rather than to impose forms on top. We're laying to rest this night, dominator virus culture, can I eat it, own it, control it, kill it, you know, impose upon it, dominate it. rather than what we're giving birth to, cooperate, collaborate. So, you know, there's a saying also, I forgot which wise woman said, as long as God is a guy, guys will be God. So we'd say we want a democratic mythology as well. And part of the rhythm of now is that it's described that this, for the first time ever, we're being invited to co-create with the spirits, with the dream world, with everything, an all-inclusive, all-invitational, embracing mythology of egalitarian. We'd say the forces of the divine needs us for its incarnation. We need it. You know, we need to collaborate with the wolves, the coyotes, those who've died this year, all of it. And that it is more than perfect that we as humans cannot resolve the tremendous irreverent conundrums that we've invoked by ourselves. It requires inviting back in that which has been most exiled, which is intimacy. Intimacy with creation and cooperating with everything. So we have to cooperate in order to create a cooperative culture. All of that. So this honoring the dead we want to do also too. This is traditionally a time when we honor the dead who have died in this year that we lay to rest this night. So there are many great teammates who have left the stage. George Harrison, as a friend of mine who knew him, says, you know, well done, lad, you know, good theme. This also, the theme of Lord of the Rings, in 1965-66 was the last time that Saturn opposed Pluto, and now it opposes Pluto again. And 65-66 was when the Lord of the Rings came out, and it came out many years earlier. To, you know, it was only published 3,500 copies and didn't sell very well, which I think should give hope to all of us aspiring authors. Wait for the next rhythm. Saturn opposite Pluto, then 65-66, everybody reads it, becomes the frame story. It's also when we have the last time maybe an external culture, the Beatles, the frame stories that were outer representations of inner collective reality. And we're having that again, but we're also invited even more to liberate that, to have culture as that again too. So we can't do it alone. We invite in all those who died this year. There's George Harrison, a man also, a great fellow, Sir Peter Blake, who was a great New Zealand national sailing hero, who left all that some years ago to work on water and the environment and saving the world. And he was slain by pirates on the Amazon some weeks ago. His last journal entry reads this: why are we here? The quality of water and the quality of life in all its infinite forms are critical parts of the overall ongoing health of this planet of ours, not just here in the Amazon, but everywhere. The hardest part of any big project is to begin. We have begun. We are underway. We have a passion. We want to make a difference. And now I'm going to go die. So he did, but he left it to us. Ken Kesey also has left the stage, who said our job is nothing less than to save the world. You know, the magic bus is there on the other side, and we want to call it in as well. So there's all those who died September 11th, each creature equally valuable. There are the 4,000 civilians who have died in Afghanistan since September 11th. There are the people who just died in Argentina yesterday. All of the dead. And Pluto would say to us, we cannot live through the dead, but we can invite the dead to live through us. And also very poignant, again, our theme of meaningful work. We also want to honor the dead, the two Tyson chicken workers who died from methane gas after falling into a giant vat of chicken parts. You can go, oh my God. The horror of how we treat animals and how we treat humans. A crucial part of the fairy tale motif available for us now as well is that in many of the redemptive stories, the hero or heroine will set forth, and they often have a magic animal. In fact, it's crucial. There's a magic animal almost always in the stories. And often it's a humble shaggy pony. And the shaggy pony knows how to ford the burning river and how to climb the glass mountain. And we say that the magic animal, how we treat animals in the world, is how we treat our own Mars, our own instincts. And that the magic animal is an animation of our own heroism and our own eros as well. And so at a crucial juncture in the story, the wise heroine, the wise hero, who has much to do, must let the reins go slack on the pony, because the pony knows how to do these amazing, impossible things that the mind is completely daunted by. Like, oh, save the world, make a living, how can I do these things? It's like the pony knows. Let the reins go slack. It's in keeping with the cultural transformation we want to embody, which is not tight, not control. At certain crucial moments, we let the reins go slack so that the pony, the wise pony within, and our treatment of creatures without can do the impossible thing as well. So this brings us also to the realm of music, the power of music. In the 16th century, Suleiman's brother was called Sultan the Divine Fool, king of poets. And he was famous for his songs of magical protest, like we want to bring alive again as well, too. Magical protest in the service of life, they were songs of great beauty. The report comes down through the ages. It was said that in his songs, spirit marries the life of the senses in such ecstatic purity as to transform the singer and the listener and to dissolve the distance between them. And his songs were called breaths. So part of the power of now and the power of the heart of this evening that we share with each other too is that we'd say that we're in the very, very end of the year cycle, the waning, waning, waning cycle. From the summer solstice in June, we'd say almost the way energy spirals around is counterclockwise. It comes into us, counterclockwise, radiates out from us. Again, wise colleague says, relax, the chi is unlimited. It's one of the first Kabbalistic meditations I was ever taught was to imagine each day receiving abundant energy from above and below and from the east and the west and the north and the south, and then in turn blessing all creatures above, below, east, west, north, south. And the admonition was, if it feels like the slightest bit of effort, that's not it. It's in, out. We live in a generous, again, circulating, storytelling, replenishing, golden waters, you know, universe, in and out. So at this point, we're also going to, at the heart of our evening, spiral in. It's the spiraling into the still point from which we will gather great force and invite in all exiled beauty to come be allies with us. And that's our reset button, right into the still point, the hara, and then from that, it's clockwise. We receive clockwise, we send out clockwise. We then enter into the whole creative domain. So Scheherazade spirals us out of oppositional mythology and the thoughts and feelings and actions it engenders. Because as we get to banishing also too, we'd say Saturn opposite Pluto says, well, what do we want to die to if we do not if we are not to die from it? We go all opposition, all face off, us, them. You're either with us or with the terrorists. You're either this or an infidel. And I think it's important also, God knows, you know, as Swami Vivekananda says, we are in a culture which is irony deficiency. We want to move certain phrases out into the vernacular. So when Osama bin Ashcroft and then Bush was mouthing him, was saying, we can't tell you the names of the people, the Arabs that we've detained because it might harm them. No, let's see. We can't tell you the names of the people we've detained because it might help the terrorists. And I thought, well, we should move this out, you know, into the phrase, anything that we really don't want to do. You know, I'd like to have lunch with you, but it might help the terrorists, so I can't. I'd like to tell you the price of lettuce, but it might help the terrorists, you know. So all of that oppositional face-off, you know, so we're about to, with the help of the gorgeous Ida Maxime, journey to the still point from which we summon back into our hearts all exiled beauty, coming home incarnate into the structure of our lives. You know, the birth of the hero redeemer this night in each one of us, what do we invite in to incarnate? In what form? Our most, you know, wildest mythological potent self is hovering also right behind us, and before evening's end will step into us as well. So this is the great song in which we come to the still point and invite in all exiled beauty back into the world. Because Venus would say to us, we don't need to source anything. It's like the golden waters of life. We have only to invite it in. We don't need to be strong, but to invite in strength. We don't need to be wise, but to invite in wisdom. We don't need the solution, but to invite in the solution. Again, it's this collaborative domain. spirit operators standing by at all moments going, look, they finally asked. Let's send them a rainbow. God, okay.
There are so many lights in this world. They can block out the moon and the stories of stars. And so many roads in this world. So many planes and buses and cars.
So much beauty in this world. That's, I first heard Ida do that when we did our first collaborative endeavor right after September 11th. Strong, strong. And again, just I've always loved Middle Eastern dance from earliest on. And the resonating with it too, and just that sense of invoking, inviting, that like all trivialized things, the Middle Eastern dance always was about inviting in, bringing in the force really strong, and the positive aspect of Eros, kinship with everything. And good news has reached us today, oh audience of the age, that many of us know the travails of indigenous people all around the world, especially around the issues of oil and the Uwa people in Colombia. And this also in keeping with our aspiration to wed spiritual magic and to know we can do nothing alone, only in collaboration with nature. Again, a great phrase, only those serving an apprenticeship to nature can be trusted with machines. So the Uwa in Colombia, if only Al Gore had talked to them, he might have actually been allowed to win the election, but he wouldn't. So Standard Oil, as many of us know, Standard Oil has been planning on drilling in the Uwa, said that they would kill themselves if their homeland was destroyed. But they've taken a different tactic, which has worked, which is the Uwa for the last 6 months have been praying for the oil to hide itself. And it did. Standard Oil has been unable to find the oil. They've been drilling several places and going, Vana. Oh, and the Uwa are going, oil, oil, hide, hide, hide. What a good idea. You know, so praying for the oil, that's not a bad idea. We could lend ourselves to that. Pray for the oil. Hide, hide, run, go. It's also in years ago when I first met very strong Hawaiian friends who were activists also too, and they introduced me to Pele, the volcano goddess, where you can go and sit in her caves and underground tunnels. And so whenever bad projects were planned, there was a particularly bad project being planned in Hawaii to destroy virgin rainforest for a power plant. And so the Hawaiian people would go and pray to Pele, we let us enter into an alliance. We offer ourselves as an incarnational vessel for you. And we give you energy also too. This collaboration between worlds, crucial, this democratic mythology. The gods, the forces of nature need us, we need them. It's all a working collaboration. It's crucial. It's again, this comes from wonderful Robinette Kennedy, who teaches transpostures, very strong tradition that goes back, that was noticed and rediscovered that there are postures in statues, shamanic statues around the world, that very interesting, that have a commonality, and very interesting things happen when you adopt those postures. And I've been in rooms where people would adopt the postures, not told what they were, you know, and then with trance-inducing drumming, and everyone would say, oh, I felt like I was flying, and that was the eagle posture. So after a workshop, we'd been doing one particularly strong posture, and she passed around a picture of a statue in this posture and said, this is mislabeled goddess. And she said this startling thing. She said, there was no goddess worship in the Mediterranean. I was like, whoa? What ho? And she said, no, not in that sense of worship that we've come to understand it in the modern world. There was no matriarchy. The problem is archy. I said, well, I've been lecturing about this wrong for years. What do you mean? How interesting. There's a great surge when we change our minds about something, like, oh, years of work, wrong. Ah, what a relief. Changing minds is good, and inviting that, that's part of the art of pleasure too. We want to transform tyranny by inviting it to greater pleasure. That's what Scheherazade did. You can do that, but we're having a hell of a time over there, over here, and there's no oil there anyway, so come on over. So what Robinette went forth into, and she lives in Crete a lot of the time and knows a lot, and it's an interesting thing to put forward. She said, no, in hunter-gatherer society, it was understood as egalitarian. There were forces of great power, the divine in its myriad forms of expression, absolutely reverence. But it was always understood as collaboration and working with, not, oh, I'm a nothing, you know. But always working with. And she said, it's only when we get paid agriculture and archy, patriarchy, that you begin to get this separation, this loss of intimacy. And so again, we'd say, well, a democratic mythology is what we want to then experiment with or be open to, or go, oh, what an interesting idea. The divine, working with the divine. So the Uwa have this idea. So
And the scientists will go, we're going to just do it again. We are like, you know, Princess Parizada's dumbass brothers. We're just going to do this thing again. Oh, it erupted again. Well, statistically, it shouldn't work, so we're going to do it. Oh, it didn't. Oh, okay. It's like Swami Vyandananda says, you know, sure it works in practice, but does it work in theory? You know, so it did. And then the scientists went away, and they leave our story here. But that idea, again, of ingenious collaborating, and again, the good news that comes to us from the UWA, not completely resolved, but the oil is hiding now, and we go, these are all clues. This is all a good direction to experiment with. And in the model of good-hearted progressive activists, we go, are things working so well we shouldn't experiment at all? We go, no, let's experiment with everything. Try this. You know, and certainly also part of the rhythm will move into the bright prospects available to us. That, again, some things are always true, but there are moments when they are truer. Power of imagination, one of the themes coming up in 2002 is that there will be Saturn, structure of world opposite Pluto, death and destruction. But we'll trine, we'll make a 120-degree angle to Neptune, dreams, vision, imagination. That it is always true that imagination lays the tracks for the reality train to follow, but it's about to be really greased. So as we set our intentions this night, we lay down the old forms in which our energy has been invested and have the energy quickened and then go, ah, and what new vows will we all, each one of us, take this night? Regardless of how impossible it seems, the point of fairy tales is, you know, setting an intention for something possible. No, set an intention you don't think you can do, but your shaggy pony might know how to do it. You know, or with the aid of the divine, or with the UWA, or the oil, you know, all of that. So that crucial theme of collaborating Saturn trining Neptune also does indeed say, I mean, we've had some turnaround. Also, blessed KPFA is being Scheherazade. We might say, like, KPFA was like the last virgin in the land saying, I'm going to volunteer to take on tyranny and save all women, lift the curse in the land, and liberate even the tyrant from his own spell, and quicken the other stations. Because part of also Saturn and Gemini, Saturn says structure, Gemini also is language. We know that part of our value, our intimacy of connecting increasingly also here and having a language is that language takes us to the realm it describes. If we have a language, we can go there. We can journey to the heart of creation. We can gather great imaginative force. The language guides us. It also says the power of words now, always strong, always the magician. So the gods would also say, no sense being half mad, go fully mad, meaning, you know, go around proclaiming, and let it be this, and let the oil hide, and let it go this way. As long as it's always with the Jupiter and Cancer proviso, let it be for the good of all. Let it always be for the good of all. And we know that, you know, the war on terrorism is ludicrous because it is pouring oil, you know, on fire. That terrorism comes from violence. It is born from war, clearly. And so what is the spiral? How do we spiral out through beauty? And the example, the spiral is the most commonly found form in nature. It's galaxies, it's hurricanes, it's our hair pattern, it's, you know, it's the resolution of opposites. It's nature's way of resolving conflict is the spiral, that spiral dance. When you pour, you know, Michael Schneidman, wonderful mathematician, says when you pour, you know, cold moving cream into hot coffee, spiral, it spirals everywhere. And the one, you know, manifest incarnate story that I must tell again just because it's so good and literal is a friend of mine, large man, 6'6" guy, was studying contact improv dance where you spiral. You spiral with your partner. You encounter somebody and you spiral against them. He was walking across the street in Baltimore in a crosswalk. And so, of course, somebody hit him going 40 miles an hour because that's the East Coast. he was so embodied in his spiraling that the car hit him at 40 miles an hour, and on impact, he spiraled with it. He danced, spiraled, rolled over the top of the car, landed on his feet completely unhurt to the applause of the bystanders. The car was crushed, but the driver was okay. It's like, what a good idea. Spiraling, not facing off, us, them, this, that. You know, if something's hurtling at you at 40 miles an hour, you can defy it if you want, but that's a bad idea. But again, spiral. Let me tell you a story. Whoa, over here. Look over this way. And the storytelling also, not only Scheherazade, you know, saves her life and the world by the art of storytelling, but if you look at the root of, you know, Aesop's fables, Aesop was walking over a bridge and brigands were going to throw him over the bridge. And he said, wait, let me tell you a story and that will reveal to you why this is a bad idea and bad things will happen to you if you do this. The power, again, of the story. And this, again, came, you know, to me, the first Gulf War, which was incredibly... I was just ineffectively enraged. And a wonderful friend said, a much better way, rather than lecturing people, like, oh, you're facing off, you're bad, is, did you know, again, did you know that the Kuwaitis were slant-drilling oil? Did you know this thing? Let me tell you this story. Because everyone wants to hear a story. And it's also part of the positive enchantment that we gather and we invite in the Scheherazadean irresistible storytelling part of all of us. We'd say that we have been bereft of storytellers. And we have some great ones. We have Jim Hightower, we have Daniel Sheehan, we have just more. It's gathering force, and it can be born in each one of us also tonight, too. The power to tell a story as opposed to facing off and go, did you know this? Did you know about this thing? It's very strong. So there are certain things as we head in to our banishing phase of the evening. You know, we could dive in anywhere. There's so much to banish, and so much will be symbolic. But there are just some things that really just call for attention, too. Newspaper story, EPA calls for pause in pesticide tests on humans. And this is, it's a very radical idea. But we might want to throw pesticides into the cauldron on this longest night. But the story is extraordinary, too, because humans were paid $400 each to drink pesticides. I know. Well, it gets worse. One volunteer who received the highest dose, four times the dose that the EPA says almost always produces adverse effects in animals, developed numbness in the upper arms, which doctors in the test ruled was possibly connected to drinking pesticide, but they weren't sure. Okay? Levels of an enzyme in her blood fell by 28%, a level that company scientists agreed was unlikely to be simply chance. Other women at the same dose, this seems to be all women who drank the pesticides, other women at the same dose reported headaches, nausea, vomiting, intestinal cramps. On more than half a dozen occasions, company paid doctors who did not know whether the women had been given the pesticide or placebo ruled that the symptoms were possibly or probably related to drinking pesticide, but they couldn't be sure. In the scientists' final conclusion, they said the pesticide did not produce any of these symptoms. And it goes on, and it says the doctors associated with Agro Sciences, which was conducting the test, said no. Similar symptoms were also seen in other places in the population, you know, and that there were no clear patterns between the symptoms and the dose of pesticide, and that the doses were clearly below the level of toxicity. And it's like, what does it take? You go, I drank this pesticide, and now I can't feel anything in the lower part of my body. No, not enough. So there are so many stories, oh, audience of the age, you know, to regale us with, too. You know, there was an excellent story also, too, Paul Krugman, December 7th, New York Times, called Hitting the Trifecta. So lo, oh, audience of the age, it has come to us, the tale of Enron. And, you know, hitting the trifecta. So what he says, it's too good not to read some. Shortly after September 11th, G.W. Bush... And it's nice also how many people really don't refer to him as president, actually. G.W. Bush interrupted his inveighing against evildoers to crack a joke. Bush had repeatedly promised to run an overall budget surplus at least as large as the Social Security surplus, except in the event of recession, war, or national emergency. Lucky me, he remarked. I hit the trifecta. Lucky him, indeed. The analogy to Enron is irresistible. Enron management and the administration, Enron did so much to put in power. Because Enron gave George Bush $2 million, bought him the governorship and on. You know, applied the same strategy. First, use cooked numbers to justify big giveaways at the top. Then let ordinary workers who trusted you pay the price. But Enron executives got caught. Mr. Bush believes that the events of September 11th will let him off the hook. Earlier, Mr. Bush used projections of vast budget surpluses to push through a huge 10-year tax cut, benefiting those earning $200,000 or more a year. Now, Mitch Daniels, the budget director, tells us that the budget, not just Social Security, but the whole enchilada, will be in deficit through 2004. Phony budget math means that we have effectively returned to a state of permanent deficit. Now, due to, you know, weapons of mass distraction and all of that, too, accelerating tax cuts is the moral equivalent of the big bonuses that Enron executives took days before it went bankrupt. There's a lot brewing on that as well, too. Many of us know that the word inauguration comes from the word augury, and that what it came from was that the augur was the diviner, usually watching bird flights. And the augur would watch the augury, the pattern of birds, and when they were sure this was the right leader, then they would inaugurate the leader, because the birds, the talking bird, had spoken and said, "This is the guy." Well, although there are talking birds, and we do need our animal allies, because some weeks ago when I was feeling just bleak, like, oh, no, I was again listening to you know, and also whenever we feel good, we can just, you know, turn on the TV and go, oh, much better, I feel bad now. So I was listening to C-SPAN radio, and it was a George W. Bush press conference, but it was clearly outside because every time he spoke, the crows came in, caw, 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 and then he stopped, and they would stop. And then he'd say, my precious, and they'd go, caw, caw, lies, lies, lies. Oh, yay, crows. So we need to collaborate with the crows and go, yes, I mean, I feed them more regularly now on my roof, going, go, more press conferences, go, you crows, good. What a good idea. You know, all the chicken bones on the roof. I mean, they are the composters. They are the composters of the sky. I mean, they love stuff. And so on the roofs, you know, crows. And they do have their conferences. So on Inauguration Day, I thought, what should I do? Oh, yeah. So we'll pray for literal hail to the chief, hail to the thief. And it did. It hailed. At first, I wanted biblical hail, but that was not in keeping. And so it was just a little kind of pathetic hail. So that was good. And so the animals and I went to the woods to watch for auguries, and we did. We saw crows everywhere, and we saw hawks, too. Got into the car and listened to the story about, I've spaced on the name, it's called a hawk, and it's a flying machine, I'm coming from the Arabian Nights, that the Marines made, that they cooked the books, and it's completely unsafe, and anyway, lots of scandal coming from that. The osprey, thank you, it was the osprey. And I was like, there's the augury. Oh, it's the birds again talking. It turns out also I was talking to a friend of mine who used to fly helicopters, medical emergency rescue stuff. And the Black Hawk helicopters were called by everyone who flew them the crash hawks, because they are machines where there is no window for the pilot. It's all electronic. And they said it's just crazy, and especially in dusty environments, it's completely insane. So the auguries are speaking to the birds, and we ally ourselves to that too. So when we know it's all about oil, we won't go into that, but things we want to throw into the cauldron, also things, strong stuff. I mean, again, the war on terrorism, the alleged war, China's increased execution of separatists who yearn for a homeland. A man recently sentenced to 20 years for translating the UN human rights document. 20 years, that'll do it. So, many people being executed. One man's crime was that he had translated the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights into Tazik. So this is a strong, wild part of the world, all of it cooking, and then it comes into us also in these micro ways. In the last month, Saturn again, we need to reinvent to have KPFA and Pacifica, we want our own communication systems, because communication systems over the last month have gone into major glitches, and I made the terrible mistake of signing up with Comcast for high-speed internet connection, too, which has been, oh, no, no, it's like, so I have no email for a while, and whenever you would call Comcast, that had the worst call waiting music in the world, it was 8,000 violins playing something just horrible, just incredibly horrible, and you would call them at 3 a.m., and I would say, due to heavy caller volume, it's like, no, you liars, you liars, you liars. Oh, no. And it got, you know how when you have like a little cut in your finger or something and you just can't stop messing with it? So every now and then I would go, I'm feeling kind of calm. I know. I'm going to call Comcast. Right? And that will just, no. And it was like, you know, do it. These calls may be recorded. It's like, they better be recorded, you dingbats. Oh, God, nightmare. You know, you over-marketed, under-capacity, demon, you know, bad genie, ifrit. It was full of lies and incompetence and just terrible. And so I did say, and I hope you are recording this. I have a consumer affairs radio show. It's kind of true. And it's sort of mythic consumer affairs, you know. And I'm going to talk about it. It's just terrible. It's like, so it is. It was just like turning on the corporate news. So how do we tell the story and which story feels better? So every now and then I would torture myself by calling Comcast and getting put on hold for an hour, just driven insane like the Ipcress files. So instead, though, periodically the dogs would haul me out going, quit watching that TV or that empty screen and come out into the misty, moonlit woods at night. I was like, yes, much better. What a good idea. The world is not defined by Comcast. The world is defined by wolves and coyotes and the moon and Jupiter overhead and the mists and the trees, and they're all waiting to collaborate with us. So there's also a beautiful part in On the Road to Baghdad 2, at a crucial moment where the heroine is madly in love with this man that she also sees being unfaithful to her with another woman. Again, stories within stories. Eroticism without heart leads us to huge melodrama over and over again and leads to the violence in the world is the theme of the 1001 Nights. And so she says, the fallen world of vanity, jealousy, malice, and revenge, she could have that or she could wake up refreshed. The smell of the fallen world was so strong. We could say the smell of the fallen world is so strong. But there was a calling to remain innocent, as if someone were cheering her on, supplied with strength from inside. And in that, it's the son that she is pregnant with. It's the new life that is born within all of us, too, the hero redeemer. And she said, someone was present who wanted her to remain steadfast, clear, and fair, connected to a lapping ocean of perpetual love, that we are always blessed with choice. Which story feels better? And we remember our choice. Because certainly also, too, one of the crucial themes of now, what is different from this whole, from all solstices, what is unique now, one of them is that Venus is in her cycle in the underworld. Venus, again, the idea of healing our relationship to beauty, healing our relationship to money. We've done terrible things to money. The Panchatantra, again, where we started, says, to be wise in the world, one must be secure. The mouse must live beyond the reach of the cat's paw, you know, if we're to do things. And that's what we also want to invoke for each other as well. Another crucial part of tonight and the season that we're embarking upon is that the sun and Chiron, little planetoid, are conjunct for the first time ever that we've known about it at the solstice time. And Chiron in Greek mythology is the first mythological figure to found a mystery school and to where all heroes and heroines would go to study to cultivate their unique contribution to the world and to redeeming the world, as we are all here tonight to do that as well. He was the first Greek mythological figure to take weapons of war and turn them into art, take bows and arrows, turn them into lutes, as we are all devoted to as well. So he also, with one of his, as my great colleague Dale says, one of his better known students, Asclepius, Greek god of healing, they go throughout the ancient world in Pergamon in Turkey and in Kos in Greece, and they found the mystery, they found the Asclepions, where people went to summon a healing dream for themselves and their community. And so it says, this solstice, this winter night, this beginning of winter, this winter season, we are all at the Asclepion. That's where we are now. We're at the Temple of Mysteries. We're summoning the healing dream for ourselves and for the community. And dreams are strongly available. And we also know that once we lived in a wise culture, we can feel this, we can remember it. A vision-replenishing culture, Eleusinian Mysteries, where everyone went to replenish their vision so that they could better contribute to the whole team in full cooperation with creation. This is at the root of all cultures, even and especially Western culture. But the cycle dies out, the buildings crumble. The imaginative impulse is inhaled into the psyches and souls of each one of us here. And this Capricorn invitation to incarnation says, now it's time to exhale imagination back out into matter. The mystery schools want to come back. They can come back as an evening. They can come back as a movie, as a book, as a business, as a project. The redemption of the marketplace as a place of ingenious camaraderie is all available and wants to happen. So we begin our actual sort of juju, too, which is there's a traditional chant done that I first heard from Starhawk over 20 years ago that I've done every year since then, and many of you may know it. But it goes, the longest night the wheel is turning, what will we give to the night? And we have many things we want to give to the night. It's serious and whimsical. It's cruelty, fear, credit card debt, insomnia, all of it. So the way it works is the longest night the wheel is turning, what will we give to the night? You get to shout out something that you want gone from the night, and then we say, cruelty. And then we go, cruelty is gone with the night. So we can do this, team. Okay, so we start together. The longest night the wheel is turning, what will we give to the night?
Fear.
Fear is gone with the night. Ah. The longest night the wheel is turning, what will we give to the night? Anger and... Well, no, spiritual etiquette says we can't actually give humans in there, but we can... But social agencies... But fear and all that causes... All lack of empathy. All right, that's it. Okay, so fear and lack of empathy. Fear and lack of empathy are gone with the night. Okay. The longest night the wheel is turning, what will we give to the night? Oh, many things. Obsession. Obsession is gone with the night. The longest night the wheel is turning, what will we give to the night? War. War is gone with the night. Ah, the longest night the wheel is turning, what will we give to the night?
Injustice.
thank you. All right, injustice is gone with the night. Ah, whoa. The longest night the wheel is turning, what will we give to the night?
Greed.
Greed is gone with the night. Ah, the longest night the wheel is turning, what will we give to the night?
Racism.
Racism and poison. Racism and poison are gone with the night. Ah, the longest night the wheel is turning, what will we give to the night?
Anger and?
Stupidity. Anger and stupidity. All right, let's do it together. Anger and stupidity are gone with the night. Okay, now here he clearly says it's hard to hear everybody, and everybody's got to... So we're all going to do it all together. Everybody yell out what you want gone with the night. The longest night the wheel is turning, what will we give to the night? Well, stupidity, order, terrible things. All facing off. Let's do that together. All facing off is gone with the night. Oh, what a good idea. That's good. Good team. Hey. So, the good news, the return of the light, the hero and redeemer, now that we've done the banishing. And the brief, segue, 2002, Saturn trines Neptune. You don't have to remember the dates, the gods are not Virgos. January 23rd, though. January 23rd, Saturn trine Neptune, saying, we set our intention now, stage one of manifestation, end of January. It will come into being. We go, let it be this way. And it is that crucial theme also of blessing. I mean, we learned from facing off with tyrants just on the micro level of our own cute little neighborhood, you know, enveloped by monster box developers and builders, is that when they wanted us to hate them. They would strut through the neighborhood going, we hate trees. You know, and we're like, oh, no. A friend points out also that in Lord of the Rings, which is, it again, is a, it's a pretty great frame story rendition, that the hobbits who are living kind of a little ecologically humbly, everybody else has big cities, it's the hobbits who are going to save the world, which is crucial. So we lived in a little hobbit town until we got invaded by monster boxes. But when we hated these guys, they got pumped up and they thrived on it. So it's like, no, that's not working. We have to do fierce blessing in the spirit of Scheherazade. So the dunderheaded builder had an even more dunderheaded son, as is often the case. And he was like, oh, swagger. Oh, yeah. And so he thought, no, okay, we have to wish him a lottery. And he moved to South Dakota. No, that's too mean to South Dakota. No. Okay. We wish him, if it be for the benefit of all, that he fall in love with a woman who melts his heart, but not in this neighborhood. And we go, if it be for the good of all. Well, the dunderheaded son of the developer went missing, really on a milk carton, missing, gone for several months, and then showed up. He had fallen in love with a woman who melted his heart. And he did come back to every now and then put a nail in once a month, but never in a bad way again. So the power of fierce blessing, you know, may it go well for you, you dingbat. Ha! Because then they can't, you know, again, it's in the never-ending story, that movie, the one really great part of it was the magic, ingenious little boy, again, this ingenuity, not violence, ingenuity in fairy tales is what works. The evil sorceress who wants to devour the world, I will every year. She's tricked him out of two of his three wishes. He only has one wish left. What to do? And he goes, I wish for you to have a heart, Zendara. And she's like, oh, no. So that may be your answer to the bushes. We wish for you to have a heart, oh, bushes. Yes. So, because it's a physical night also, too, we do know that as we now, we're in the summoning, our finale summoning, that every now and then we do have a glimpse of the horrific, of how horrible it could be. But also, every now and then we get a glimpse through the reality police curtain, and it's the job of all artists to, you know, open that curtain up. We get a glimpse of how beautiful it is and could be, how incredibly beautiful. Again, we can come up with a vision that would include everyone that we could agree on. You know, what could we all agree on? Inner cities blooming, you know, all children well fed. Yes. It's only when people get to how that they go to war. Like, oh, no. But that's why, again, it says start with the vision, not with what seems possible. Realism is a trick of depression, trap you into a negative world. So what we want to do also, too, is imagine that glimpse of beauty, and that we put our hands, as all artists must, into the glimpse and pull it back into a vision. So, and that's what we're doing now. So we want to bring back an age of magic, you know, where we speak to everything, storytelling universes, alliances with all, omatakias, and all our relations. So we're going to end with beauty is strong. So, because one of the themes, Venus in the underworld, Venus is now invisible. She is in the underworld phase also, which does not happen very often at the winter solstice. So it is also Venus, beauty, in underworld, December 3rd until February 26th. And we're going to connect with her too, because it defines the artist storyteller. Scheherazade, through her art of storytelling, saves the world. Each one of us has a unique art as well that is trying to find each one of us, one's own particular art. And we say the artist, Venus, is art, beauty, kinship, relatedness, cooperation, invitation. It says the artist is the maximally related person. The artist is the person who invites things in. You know, we invite in the dead. Again, the theme, William Blake, a great colleague, we want to invite in anybody who's ever done work that you admire, who's dead, or who lived in fiction. They're available now to be invited in. And again, literal story is William Blake, great, wonderful, always butting his head against the wall of the reality police to let in more light. And before he would begin any important project, he would invite dead people to tea. But literally, the important part, also the incarnational invitation, you know, it says when we make something beautiful, invisible magic comes to live there. So he would make the tea and pour the cups and invite the prophets from the Old Testament. Now, we might think of jollier tea parties, but that did it for Billy. And so I was telling this to a client, an artist who was hitting a dry spell, and I said, well, why don't you, you know, Billy Blake had so many to tea, why don't you invite Billy Blake to tea? He was like, well... So anyway, I got an email the next day saying, well, you suggested for some reason that I have William Blake to tea, and I thought, well, okay. So So I got up in the morning and I made two cups of tea, one for me and one for Billy. And I went through that, and it was sort of okay. But that afternoon, the FedEx truck pulled up, and I got this giant package from someone I barely know, hadn't seen in years in England, saying, thought you might use this, a rare edition collected works of William Blake. So he said, I think I'm going to have more tea parties. Yes, more, yeah. So we would say that, too. And what we're about to, how we finale, too, is, we want your beauty song. That's right. So first beauty song. Solstice beauty song. Yes. This, that's right. That's beauty song. The elves were mixing up the notes. Okay, solstice beauty song. I'll be very quiet now. So now we're going to have the solstice beauty song as part of the quiet inviting in. No, I think so. Yes. I'm going to be quiet. Let's go back here. Come back here. Come back here. Excellent. Wonderful.
Now, that was our pre-finale. Now for our finale. Okay. This is our beauty is strong, and of course in the egalitarian model you don't have to do anything you don't ever feel like, but if you want your life to go brilliantly, you might stand up. But you don't have to. So, no longer polarity or fighting against, but invoking, inviting, irresistible, the dance, transforming tyranny by inviting it to greater pleasure, summoning in the heroic redeemer, Chiron, Venus in underworld, artist, part of ourselves. So, we're going to go back before Scheherazade and really invoke She-Wolf, she who stands up, stands behind Scheherazade. So the way we're going to do this is, She-Wolf, meaning you are invited to give expression. And as the music will invite us and it will feel perfectly natural, and this is an experiment we're all going to do. But when I go like this, you get to go, woof. And when Ida
goes like this, you get to...
So we're going to try this as our rousing offering of ourselves to the most fantastic possible. We feel our mythic spirits moving into our bodies as we do this, for instance. Okay.
Thank you.
Jennings. Thank you all for doing this great work. I'm Caroline Casey. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Whoa.